The key to evaluating yourself in the short term and still preserve confidence is to embrace the interim concept. For argument's sake, let's assume you really are the smartest one in the room. Like athletes who rely too heavily on talent alone, you'll still get beaten by other traders who work harder, who learn from mistakes faster, and who are more open-minded. To broaden your view of intelligence, you must remove the association that P&L equals intelligence. Embrace the reality of your own weaknesses and more firmly reinforce the idea that everyone has weaknesses. The faster you embrace yours, the faster you'll be able to improve on them and move your entire range forward. If you haven't already done so, I recommend you complete the A to C game analysis that I describe in Chapter 3. It gives you a way to see intraday performance in a non-monetary way. You'll also better understand the causes of fluctuations in your performance and correct them faster. If you can shift the use of your intelligence in a much more practical way, it will give you greater stability in your confidence, improving your overall performance. I also suggest you read Carol Dweck's book, Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. It's a fantastic resource for understanding a fixed view of intelligence. 3. Hindsight bias. You believe a mistake or loss could have been avoided if you thought longer, had read an obscure piece of news that others saw, hadn't hesitated, or fill in the blank with another excuse. As discussed in the section Mistake Tilt, hindsight bias includes a fantasy-like way of analyzing what you could have done differently. You believe your mistake should be easy to fix because you now see what you could have done differently. That's fiction. If it were that simple, you would have made a different decision. This fantasy comes from an inflated sense of your own competence. This problem is called hindsight bias, but really it comes from an expectation that you know the future, as if you should have the ability to know what factors to consider, what to read, when to pull the trigger, or what else could have avoided the mistake. As you look back and identify your mistakes, it feels like you should have known better. But to do that, you would have to know a mistake or a loss will happen before it happens. Of course, that's impossible. So what's this really about? What would happen if you were honest about why you failed? What would happen if you didn't make excuses and instead acknowledge that you could have done better? Does it feel bad? Would it cause you to lose confidence? Do you become pessimistic about your prospects as a trader? Do you expect yourself to be perfect or believe that you could be? The answers to your questions reveal what hindsight bias is protecting. Once you know what you're protecting, that's the problem to work out. Make that problem step one of the mental hand history and use the corresponding section in this chapter to help you fill out the remaining four steps. Confirmation bias. One of the fundamental skills of successful traders is the ability to quickly recognize when you're wrong. When you suffer from confirmation bias, you lose that skill because your confidence is based on the need to be right. Instead, you automatically seek out information to confirm your existing belief and ignore opposing viewpoints. You lack a thorough analysis of what information is filtered in or out and can have a hard time reevaluating your opinion. You're more likely to ignore contradictory suggestions from other traders. You rigidly hold onto a position in the face of mounting evidence that it's a dog, or you might quickly jump on the first bit of information that confirms your opinion about a potential trade. In reality, you can have confirmation bias for almost anything. It could be views of another trader, assumptions about the opportunity in the market this quarter, or thoughts about the type of job a CEO is doing. Perhaps you believe that you're unlucky and destined to lose, or that you're going to make millions. You could be certain a stock will rise because you personally love their products. You can believe a tech stock is poised to pop, pointing to the positive media coverage, and you're so certain of this that you don't evaluate the trajectory of advertising spend or whether the customer base is shrinking. Confirmation bias is less about the specific belief and more about a rigid attachment that you have to it. This attachment blocks out opposing viewpoints and shuts down rigorous analysis. Or worse, a more severe version of confirmation bias, you just have to be right. As a trader, your livelihood depends on a clear perception of what's happening, so you can evaluate opportunities as they are, not as you want them to be. Only when you're realistic do you put yourself in the best position to succeed long-term. To begin cracking through confirmation bias, you need to understand what's driving it. Why do you want to confirm what you already believe is true versus finding out what's actually true? Why would you want to stop learning? At a basic level, you might lack the skill to properly evaluate opposing viewpoints without losing your perspective. Perhaps you're too easily influenced by other people. Or you could be afraid that you're going to look stupid. Maybe you're unconsciously protecting yourself from finding out that you're not as good as you think, and that your results to date have more to do with luck than skill. Perhaps you want to be top dog in your firm or group and want the respect of your peers, but you don't have the results to prove it yet. So you think less of them to boost your own confidence. Confirmation bias blocks you from identifying gaps in your skill set, knowledge, and perspective, and it stops you from learning. The most basic way to begin correcting this is to identify the beliefs that you're most rigidly attached to. Look for beliefs, ideas, or statements that have been looping in your mind, day after day, month after month, and even year after year, without changing. If you were truly evaluating information objectively, the story would at least evolve. Instead, the story hasn't changed. Your bias is fixed, and you're not open to counter-arguments. Get better at being rigorous in your analysis. Learn how to understand arguments on the other side, and prove your point in the face of that argument. Blindly making assumptions is weak. Try to understand and have your perspective grow or evolve. In the end, your belief might not change, but the rationale that surrounds it becomes strengthened by having to defend it in a more rigorous way. If that doesn't sufficiently correct your bias, then it suggests that you have a deeper need to just be right. Proceed to step 2 of the mental hand history to uncover why you're so rigidly attached to being right. It could be caused by some of the examples I gave previously, or you may be defending against the idea of being wrong, indicating a deeper insecurity or weakness in confidence. In that case, you need to understand what's so threatening about being wrong. It's possible the answer extends beyond trading and is personal. Here's a sample mental hand history. 1. What's the problem? I have a strong urge to prove to myself that I can do this. I try to force a high R multiple so that I can step it up. 2. Why does the problem exist? If I'm getting high R multiples, then it's proof that I'm doing this right, and validation that I should step it up. 3. What is flawed? Actually, no, it's not proof. I could be getting lucky. And if I were getting false confirmation, I would unwittingly set myself up for a crash that would be far more painful than the short-term missed opportunities that I could have had trading outside my system. I'm also developing bad habits that I'll have to fix later on. 4. What's the correction? I want and need validation through the system. I need to focus solely on execution for the next several months. Nail it so that I can build the competence and set the foundation to level up. 5. What logic confirms that correction? Getting this far is validation in itself that I'm doing something right. I don't need validation day to day for my results. The Dunning-Kruger effect. This concept refers to the tendency of poorly skilled performers to overestimate their abilities, and conversely, for highly skilled performers to underestimate their abilities. In trading, that means on one side, traders with very little skill become overconfident because they're unable to recognize their own incompetence. They're unaware of how bad they are, and they falsely assume that they know more than other traders. On the other side are highly skilled traders who falsely assume that others share their level of knowledge and who undervalue their own competence, resulting in artificially low confidence. This concept epitomizes why confidence isn't an accurate measure of competence or future success. If anything, reality would suggest that traders on either side of this issue should feel the opposite of how they do. The commonality on both sides is a false assumption about your knowledge relative to other traders. Let's look at why your analysis might be flawed from the underconfident side. Perhaps you were raised to be humble, never gloating about yourself, your accomplishments, or what you know. Or it may come from anxiety, nervousness, or fear of standing out, and not wanting the attention or perceived expectations that come with it. You may also be aware of how many massively successful traders and investors are out there. Not having reached that level, you automatically undervalue what you know. This false perspective can be reinforced because it's much easier to look at traders more successful than you, especially those covered in the media, than it is to look behind to see how many traders are less successful than you. On the flip side, if you're overconfident relative to your actual competence, why are you so unskilled in recognizing your own weaknesses? One reason can be a belief that dominates in Western societies that you can accomplish whatever you put your mind to. This often comes with a general tendency towards denying weaknesses and emphasizing strength. Or your overconfidence might come from insecurities, where you demean other traders in order to elevate your own confidence, the classic, step on somebody else to make yourself feel bigger. So you assume other traders who don't think like you are dumb, even if they're far more accomplished. Whether you're an overconfident weak trader or an underconfident strong trader, to correct this problem, I suggest completing the A to C game analysis in Chapter 3. While you may never achieve a flawless analysis, gaining a clearer perspective on your strengths and weaknesses can help you to avoid adopting a misleading level of confidence. You may also need to establish if there's insecurity or a deeper weakness in your confidence that caused you to become overconfident or underconfident. The mental hand history is the tool to help. In my experience, this is often connected to a personal issue that extends beyond trading. When completing the mental hand history, I encourage you to think in more personal terms, even if the problem isn't showing up anywhere else in your life. Often trading can challenge you in ways that other parts of your life don't. So unresolved personal issues emerge in trading and need to be fixed to stabilize your trading confidence. Black and white thinking. Evaluating mistakes, losses, the market, or others in a black and white, all or nothing way is a hidden flaw that can underline many of the illusions and biases that I've already described. When you have a knee-jerk reaction that's truly polarized, your language contains words like always and never, or you assess your performance as either perfect or terrible, and you often oscillate between one and the other based on your results. Results in trading are black or white, but you can't evaluate yourself as a trader like that. Otherwise, you're going to have strong overreactions. To see if this is a problem for you, pay attention to whether you often make extreme statements about yourself, other traders, the market, or trading opportunities. The common denominator is whether you have a polarized way of categorizing things, classifying them without any gradation or range. For traders who tend to cycle between being overconfident and underconfident, this flaw may be part of the reason. You flip from one side of the coin to the other. Feeling confident, you see yourself as a genius. Not feeling it, you consider yourself a fraud who's merely gotten lucky. This flaw was a main cause of Max's problems with greed, and ultimately confidence. Remember, he's the 4x swing trader who had a 10-level map of his pattern of greed. If he had a losing trade, Max would begin to worry about his competence and his monetary return. He wanted to be more profitable than other traders to prove that he could be successful. There was a distinct need for his competence to be recognized by others, as well as himself. Losses would make him hesitate to take another trade. He would overly focus on what he was doing wrong, and at times start to doubt his competence and think he just wasn't a good trader. He'd have to shut it down for a few days to reset. Before we began our sessions, Max assumed all traders had emotions that interfered with their performance, and he didn't know that he had the potential to eliminate these problems. Another example of black and white thinking. In our first session, we were able to unearth what lay behind his greed and confidence problems. This mental hand history shows what we found. 1. What's the problem? When greed is at its worst, I'm driven by an uncontrollable urge to make the absolute best return right now. I'm only focused on making money right now. There's no longer-term thinking. 2. Why does this problem exist? When I'm in a drawdown, my confidence weakens. I have more doubt about my ability and my goals. There's less certainty that I can hit my targets. I need to make money now to get back to break even or profit, eliminate any doubt, and feel confident enough to say that I'm a consistently profitable trader who would eventually take on investors. 3. What is flawed? I have a deep desire to prove that I can do this. The more that I can support myself, the more I prove that I can do this. This desire is healthy, but is taken to an extreme because I need to prove it right now. I don't want to prove it in 1 or 2 years. I want to prove it now. 4. What's the correction? I can't skip steps. If I want to build a big house, I can't build the third floor before I build the second. I know what I'm capable of, and I know what I've proven to myself already. 5. What logic confirms that correction? My confidence is weakened because my perception of my skill is too black and white. Clearly understanding the base of my skill allows me to know that there are always some aspects of my skill set that don't disappear. That allows me to progress in a more linear way and to have the patience to avoid impulsively jumping into marginal trades and instead only take the best ones. To help break out of the black and white way of viewing his competence, I had Max identify all the skills and knowledge that he's mastered in trading so far, all of the things that he's good at automatically and doesn't need to think about anymore. For example, being able to identify the market structure, where the key trend lines are, and support and resistance levels. I suggested he read and think about the list daily for 3 to 5 minutes. What Max quickly realized was that he is a competent trader with a solid foundation that has been built up through thousands of hours of testing by being involved in the market. Shortly after completing this exercise, his first signs of progress emerged. Max began seeing short-term decisions from a long-term perspective, allowing him to take trades he otherwise would have avoided, and to accept losses without the urge to immediately make the money back. He also found that he could avoid the urge to close out a trade below his target and stay away from trades that didn't meet all his criteria. The latter bit of progress was quite remarkable, and in two instances, he noted, it was way easier to be on the sidelines. Even though they were both in profit, I'm happy that I didn't take them. Why would I break my plan that I spent thousands of hours to create? Max still experiences the signals of greed and a weakness in confidence, but his awareness is so strong now, it rarely affects his execution. Plus, with such a strong ability to handle losses, he's now taking more trades and even doing some day trading, something he could have never successfully done before because of his emotional volatility. For you to correct a polarized way of evaluating, you must, as Max did, identify the situations where you tend to be the most polarized and integrate a perspective with gradation to it. If your polarized reactions are related to your own competence, completing the A to C game analysis is a great way to start. You'll likely only have an A or a C game to start, and the task of identifying your B game will significantly help to correct this flaw. If your categorization is related to other traders, build an understanding of where their performance contradicts how you label them. For example, if you have written them off as idiots, consciously look for indications where they perform well and have good ideas. Conversely, if you lionize them as infallible, bring them down to earth a bit for yourself by identifying weaknesses and the places where they make mistakes. If your polarized language is related to the market because you're always getting screwed and never getting your fair share, begin tracking variance. Look for examples that disprove those statements, then begin to build more nuance. This may be enough to get you to change the specific places where your reactions are too extreme. If not, you need to further investigate why your evaluation is so polarized. Perfectionism. Perfectionism is complex with different degrees of severity. Entire books are written on just this one topic. I've also discussed it several times in this book already. In fear, you learn that the standard of perfection can loom over you and add so much pressure that it can paralyze your decision-making. In tilt, you saw how expecting perfection caused anger that further degraded your execution. Now let's go a bit deeper, exploring how perfectionism or high expectations damages confidence, and some different ideas on how to solve it. The crux of perfectionism is having outside beliefs about your own capabilities. This is why the advice that no one is perfect or failure is an opportunity to learn are niceties that don't strike at the root of the problem. Traders are analytical and need more information. You don't make trading decisions based on general advice. You dig. The same is needed here. That doesn't mean that we have to delve into the personal. There are some common performance-based causes of perfectionism that you might not yet be aware of. While some traders have a healthy striving for perfection, often a driver of high performance, it can also be a double-edged sword. The downside occurs when the drive for perfection becomes excessive and creates emotional volatility. That volatility can cause every type of trading error you can imagine. It can also slow progress and create dissatisfaction, which can then lead to burnout and to finding your motivation and dedication slipping backward. I want all of you to be driven to be your absolute best and to find your own version of perfection. But in order for your attempts to strengthen confidence, they need to be balanced with some understanding about the nature of perfection. Perfectionism is not bad. That's too crude of an analysis, which doesn't account for the upside it provides. Instead, let's put a spotlight on what's excessive to transform perfectionism into something more productive. In doing so, you can blunt one edge of the sword and minimize the self-inflicted damage while sharpening the other side that allows you to excel. First off, inchworm is the antidote to the nobody is perfect line. Here's why that statement is in fact functionally incorrect. It's not about being perfect. That idea of being perfect is too large. No one is perfect. We all have a C game. We all have relative weaknesses. But that doesn't mean we can't at times reach our own version of perfection when we're in the zone and maximizing our capabilities at that moment in time. That's a version of perfection. You can attain it at times, just not over a large sample. Being perfect in that sense doesn't mean that you squeeze the most profit out of every day. After all, given variance, that's not even entirely in your control. It's more about your own version of perfect decision-making and execution, given your current range. Also, once you reach perfection, the standard rises. Performing at that level means the front end of your inchworm moves forward. Your capacity grows, and a new definition of perfection emerges. You have a new A game, and the easiest way to reach perfection again comes not by pressing forward from the front, but by correcting aspects of your B and C game and moving forward from the back. Whether or not you're aware of perfectionism being an issue for you, it may be helpful to read through the following list. There may be signs here that you wouldn't have recognized that fit under the perfectionism umbrella. You put a lot of pressure on yourself to be great. Constant internal pressure doesn't allow you to relax or take a break, which leads to burnout. You feel like nothing is ever good enough, even after big profitable days. You never applaud good results and assume that anyone in your shoes could achieve them. Self-criticism bubbles up over the slightest misstep, and you treat all mistakes as equal. You continually feel you're not doing enough compared to others. There's always somebody doing better. You have a hard time moving on, letting go, or getting over a mistake because you obsess over them and have regrets. You perform at your peak infrequently. You feel like you're falling behind. With those in mind, let's look more closely at two causes of perfectionism: a faulty self-evaluation caused by an accumulated deficit in confidence, and mistaking expectations for goals. Faulty self-evaluation. All of us have an internal measuring stick, in a sense, to evaluate our level of skill, get feedback on how we're performing, and identifying what to improve on. At the beginning of the chapter, I stated that confidence problems arise from flaws in your perspective of your skill. In this case, perfectionistic traders have flawed methods of evaluating themselves. It's common for traders to achieve milestones, such as their first five-figure month, and shortly afterward think nothing of it. They fail to give themselves any credit and miss an opportunity to strengthen their confidence. Think of evaluating your skill as a game. You gain or lose points based on the quality of every trade you take or pass on. Total it up, and you get a score for the day. Daily tallies feed into monthly, monthly into yearly, and so on. The game doesn't stop until you stop trading. Perfectionists consistently fail at this game, essentially accumulating a massive debt. Your internal measuring stick is used to determine how many points you gain or lose. Perfection, or high expectations, represent the standard that you expect and forms your baseline. That means when you reach that level of expectation, you get 0 points. You don't give yourself credit for doing what you're supposed to. Only when you exceed expectations do you get points. But they can also get taken away after you move the goalposts or increase your expectations. The majority of time, you fall below your expectations and lose points. For some of you, the scale is proportional, so when you underperform slightly, you only lose a few points, and when you massively underperform, you lose more. For others, it doesn't matter whether you've fallen slightly below or far below. Failing is failing, and you lose the same amount. In this game, points equals confidence. So where does that leave you? In debt. While there have been some times you've earned some points, they are strikingly low compared to the massive number you've lost. That produces a hole or a weakness in your confidence that can underlie both a consistent lack of confidence and overconfidence. High expectations initially get you into debt, but as this problem evolves, you believe that reaching perfection will get you out of it. There's a subconscious sense that if you can perform perfectly, your debt will be wiped clean and you'll now feel consistently and justifiably confident. However, once you've reached a new height in performance, you now expect this standard to show up every time. The goalposts move again. You've just jumped higher and now expect to jump even higher. The moment of satisfaction is fleeting, as your mind immediately moves on to what's next. Or you don't even experience that fleeting moment, dismissing the value of what you've attained, having already moved on to the next expectation. Either way, rather than being debt-free, you're deeper in the hole. The process repeats, and you think the bigger accomplishments, more money, status, responsibility, etc., will finally do the trick. This is why you have incredibly successful traders who are miserable. They are so driven by money, they think more of it will finally allow them to be satisfied. Money can't get them out of this debt. External sources, even heaps of praise from others they hold in high regard, can't reconcile the debt. What you need to do is recalibrate your internal measuring stick and make it more accurate. To do that, you need to recognize that you've been mistaking expectations for goals. Expectations versus goals. The difference between an expectation and a goal is significant. Basically, an expectation implies a guarantee. In this case, it's a guarantee to attain the results you want, which means that you believe you either have the requisite skill or you're certain to attain it along the way. On the other hand, a goal implies uncertainty. The exact road to the end is unknown. And while the skills needed may be known, whether you can attain them and how you'll acquire them is not. Expectations just want the outcome and don't care how you'll get there. Goals come baked in with a recognition of the potential for chaos along the way. While you can be driven with the same level of intensity by a goal or expectation, there's a distinct difference in how you feel when, for example, you pursue a target to make $500,000 in a year. If it's an expectation, when you face mistakes, setbacks, or failures along the way, you're unprepared and overreact. There's a lot more self-criticism, as well as the potential for overconfidence or a loss of confidence. If you're actually able to attain your expectations, you get 0 points and feel nothing, or perhaps you even feel worse. Whereas with goals, you're prepared to handle the setbacks, and you understand the lessons and the value they provide. Goals imply learning and a lot of ups and downs. There's an implicit understanding that you'll discover new things on the road to getting there. You'll also gain a sense of pride and satisfaction for each step along the way. The result of an accurate internal measuring stick is that you have a chance to collect points as you make progress at each step along the way. You build up a reserve of confidence with each milestone you hit, so the finish line is not the first time you feel proud or satisfied. The net result is a stronger foundation of confidence that you leverage to pursue your next goal. Perhaps the most obvious difference between an expectation and a goal is how you evaluate the outcome when you fall short. As a goal, you might get upset, but rather than dwelling on it, you look proactively at the results. How or why did I fail? What did I not prepare for? Could this been avoided? In what areas have I succeeded and made progress? What have I learned? How will I do better on my next goal? The answers to those questions immediately make you better, not only at achieving your goals, but at setting future goals. Many of you will look at this problem and assume my advice is to lower your expectations. No, I want your aspirations to be as high as you want them to be. The problem is not that you want to be perfect, it's that you expect it. The correction is not to lower your expectations, instead, convert them into a goal. Conceptually, the only thing you can truly expect is your absolute worst or your C game. That's the only thing that's guaranteed. The rest of your range, B game and A game, have to be earned every day. You get credit or earn points when you do. Proportionally, of course. You also get points when you learn more about the cause of variation in your performance and when you make corrections. Spotting progress is easier when you create an A to C game analysis as outlined in Chapter 3 and use it as your measuring stick to get real-time and daily feedback. Changing how you evaluate your daily performance is the first step towards correcting perfectionism. But for it truly to stick, you must go back into your history as a trader and correct the damage caused by your old measuring stick. You need to get yourself out of debt. Obviously, you can't change what has happened in the past, but changing your perspective on it can reconcile the lost confidence that you earned but didn't accumulate. Very often there are past accomplishments or benchmarks that at the time weren't given the proper respect, praise, or acknowledgement. It doesn't matter if your spouse, friends, coworkers, or boss lauded you with praise and even threw you a party. Your perspective is what matters. Go back and look at all the accomplishments you've had since the start of your trading career, successfully getting off the sim, your first profitable month, the first time you made more than $10,000 from a single trade, etc. Big or small, write down as many of your accomplishments as you can, especially the ones where you felt ho-hum and didn't really feel particularly proud of or satisfied by them. As you start going through your accomplishments, keep an eye out for, yeah, but, entering your mind. This common phrase is used to downplay what you've accomplished. Yeah, but, I could have made more, done more, work harder. Yeah, but, compared to so-and-so, it's nothing. More is always out there. That's the way of the world. And the accomplishments of others have no relevance on what you've attained. The second step is to list all of your past accomplishments and write precisely how you achieved each one. What were the steps you took? What did you learn? What difficulties did you encounter, and how did you get through them? Now looking back on it, how is it a building block or stepping stone to where you are today? You also don't have to have a completed list before you start delving into each accomplishment. You can go back and forth. More important is how you go about listing your accomplishments and writing about them. This can't be a task that you do for 2 hours on one day and that's it. You're trying to reshape your perspective. It's far more effective to do it regularly for, say, 5 to 10 minutes a day. An accumulated deficit makes you feel like you're starving for confidence, and the next accomplishment on the horizon seems like the feast that will finally satisfy you. Only it's a mirage, and you're just eating a pile of sand. The process of doing 5 to 10 minutes per day, perhaps even several times a day, is like eating. You're feeding yourself the confidence you've been starving for. Once you've gone through this process for all your accomplishments, review them. You might even learn more as you go through a second round, further instill the correction, and strengthen the new way of evaluating yourself. Step 3 is to extract and confirm the skills or assets you've learned as a trader, especially those you've taken for granted. You can do this alongside your review of past accomplishments, but keep them listed separately. The point here is that your perfectionism doesn't care about the details of your skill set. It just demands perfection. This is your way of easing back that intensity. For example, your skills might include making quick and accurate decisions when the market goes crazy, estimating future price, preparing a clear strategy for the day and applying it at the right time. Your skills and your past give you stability. Review them at the start of the trading day. Then use your A to C game analysis as a new measuring stick at the end of the trading day and evaluate performance and progress. The combination of these serves to steadily reshape your perspective, fill the hole in your confidence, and allow you to climb higher. You'll be able to capitalize on what comes next by standing on a foundation of what you've already built. This won't happen overnight, so be aware of perfectionism related to the process of correcting your perfectionism. It can undermine your progress. The advice in this section was particularly important to Chris, the trader from Chapter 4 whose greed was connected to the pain from missing out on life-changing money. Even though it happened years ago, the regret remained constantly on his mind. If, for example, he sold a position for profit, he would immediately think about how he could have made more. As a result, Chris would often get aggressive once a trade turned profitable, and he'd try to turn it into a home run. In addition to greed, Chris experienced waves of other emotions. At times he felt invincible, as if he had cracked the market. And in this state, he would go after losers harder, assuming he'd get the next one. He figured out the market, right? So the next one had to win. Not surprisingly, his biggest drawdowns came after these periods of overconfidence. The boom and bust cycles crashed his confidence, and Chris would question whether his strategy was still viable. That would spark a strong urge to make money in order to feel good again. Chris also had twinges of FOMO and doubts about the viability of his strategy. After a string of losers, he would try to recoup them to end the day positive by forcing more trades. In addition, anger would arise after he'd get stopped out several times in a row. He'd become more aggressive and impatient, and stray from his strategy by entering too soon. However different they may seem on the surface, for Chris, the signals of greed, fear, anger, overconfidence, and a lack of confidence were all related to an expectation of perfection. Chris knew he had an edge with the system he traded, but he was struggling to comprehend why he wasn't allowing that edge to play out in the long term. Over the years, he had read a ton of trading books, but hadn't gotten to the root of his problem. He was trapped in a cycle of managing emotions and couldn't sustain progress. Chris would have high moments and weak moments. There was no middle ground. He'd swing from one end to the other, and there was a direct impact on his execution. In our first session, we discussed the concepts and strategies from this section. It immediately hit home and provided a new perspective on the trade that continued to haunt him. Between our first and second session, Chris spent some time writing in detail about the trade and realized it was the catalyst for taking trading seriously. At the time, he had been in an unfulfilling job with long hours and was looking for a way out. Despite having no proven system or trading education, he got lucky and found a company that had good fundamentals. It was on the brink of bankruptcy, but there was talk that a big-name bank was coming in with funding. Chris sold his entire portfolio and dumped it all into this one stock, thinking this could be his ticket to a better life. While he made a small profit, and it was painful to leave a lot on the table, this experience was a turning point in his life for the better. It made him realize that if he really wanted to trade, he needed more expertise. He invested his profits in training and was eventually able to leave the other job and trade full-time. Looking back on it, he realized, I would have paid $200,000 to be where I am today. Even though the regret is still there, it's significantly less and no longer triggers greed. In addition, Chris really benefited from the A to C game analysis and by journaling during trading sessions. He once swung from A game to C game, but now even taking losses, he's able to maintain a solid B game and doesn't trade outside his system. Also, his awareness of his emotions is high enough that he can quickly recognize and correct emotional reactions before they get too big. His baseline level of emotion is lower, and it no longer feels like a problem he has to manage. For Chris, knowing that he has a system for the mental game has freed him up to make progress, knowing perfection is no longer the standard. Desperation. In a flash, a mixture of anger and greed takes over. Fuck it, you don't care anymore. You switch to a 1-minute chart, triple a position as it falls, and fire off several more trades without even thinking. For some traders, their desperation is so intense it's as if they black out and wake up unaware of how they lost all that money. Maybe you're one of those who struggle more with fear and are overcome by a desperate need for certainty. Nothing you do works. Losses pile up and panic rises. You hop from one system to another, convinced these new ideas are creative, but really you're just frantic for something to work. As losses mount, greed, anger, or fear builds, making it impossible to avoid the urge to do something, anything. It gets increasingly stronger, like an itch you have to scratch. For some, winning is the only thing that can make the itch go away. Squeeze out a few winning trades or a profitable day, and you get some breathing room. But that's only temporary. Once losses pile up again, desperation returns as though it had never left. Some traders actually need to lose more in order to scratch the itch. Losing feels good because it gets the pain over with quickly and provides relief from the pressure and uncertainty. Desperation is distinguished by an intense urge to do almost anything to make money or avoid taking a loss on the day. It's often hard to recognize desperation because you're paralyzed by fear or blinded by rage or greed. These emotions are so big and obvious, they're what get noticed. But regardless of whether desperation includes greed, fear, or anger, the underlying cause is connected to weaknesses and confidence. Those emotions would not reach extreme levels if your confidence were stable. Confidence is your emotional foundation, and weaknesses are the cracks in it. Up until this point in the chapter, the weaknesses and confidence that I've covered, while problematic, have been on a smaller scale. Desperation, on the other hand, is a big gaping hole. The question becomes, why does this gaping hole in confidence exist? And what are the flaws that have made it so large? It's not just one issue. To have your mentality fall to this level means the problem is complex. You'll have multiple flaws or biases revealed in this chapter, as well as likely from fear or tilt chapters. Self-criticism, too, is a common and large part of the problem that makes desperation exponentially harder to correct. Desperation is also marked by a significant amount of accumulated emotion. The intensity of the greed, fear, and anger that show up is so strong that it instantly takes over your mind, drowning you in so much emotion that your reactions are beyond reason. Intense emotions at this level create a sense of disconnection, where you do things that don't make sense. Even though you may be aware in the moment of how irrational your reactions are, in some extreme cases, forcibly trying to control your hand on your mouse or yelling at yourself to do something different, you still can't stop from making absurdly bad decisions. Being in this state is like sitting in a movie theater watching a horror movie and screaming, "Don't open that door!" and then watching as they, you, open the door. If this problem has been going on for a while, the emotions have been building up for years. Even if it only recently became severe in trading, working on this problem away from the trading desk is mandatory to both decrease the old emotion and build up the discipline needed to have any chance of remaining in control in these situations. Accumulated emotion is the real wild card, and if you try to take on desperation without serious preparation, you have little to no chance of correcting it. Rather than showing up unprepared, work with a sense of urgency as if your trading life depends on it. It does. Having your mental game devolve to this point is not something that happens to all traders. This is as extreme as it gets from a performance standpoint. When it happens to skilled traders, it's hard to comprehend afterward just how badly they performed. The gap between normal execution and when desperation strikes can make it seem as if the trader is possessed by a demon. Much like a person addicted to drugs will do anything to score their next fix, a desperate trader will do almost anything to make money. But almost is the key word. The distinction between what you will and will not do determines whether you have a performance issue that could be addressed by using this book, or whether you have a clinical, non-trading problem that requires the direct assistance of a therapist or psychologist. Think about when this problem is at its worst, and consider whether you can remain in enough control to function as a trader, afford the financial losses that may happen while working on this problem, or tolerate the implications in your personal life. If you're going to work on this issue by using this book alone, You are accepting those and other potential risks, and you must be willing to work hard. You're in for a battle. In a few other sections, I alluded to the possibility that the flaws or biases affecting your confidence may have personal roots. In this case, there is a near certainty that it does. As you dig through the performance issues, ask yourself questions about why your emotions are so intense, how they're connected to your past, and if they show up in your life outside of trading. Resolving the personal side of this problem is necessary to have any success. And of course, this book alone won't do that. Although sometimes hard to accept, an idea that has helped clients with this issue is thinking of themselves like an injured athlete. Some of you may have such a severe injury that you need to step away from trading to heal and work on the problem for days or weeks or longer. This amount of time is what it will take to build an understanding of what's causing it, and to personalize the strategy that I outlined below to prevent desperation from destroying your trading. 1. Maintain a sense of urgency. It's a major mistake to take desperation or the steps to correct it too casually. If you think that you'll wake up one day and the problem will be gone, you're delusional. Problems of this severity aren't fixed overnight. To have a chance of fixing this problem, it has to be your top priority. 2. Map your desperation. Map the greed, fear, and tilt that are the day-to-day issues that eventually lead to desperation. These details become an early warning system. Desperation is possible every single day you trade until you have proven that it's not. You have to take aggressive steps at these early signs, even though they might not turn into that big of a deal yet, to have any chance of preventing desperation. 3. Set strict daily stop loss. Sure, you've probably set these before and blown through them, but that doesn't make it a bad strategy, especially since it's unlikely that you've combined a daily stop loss with these other steps, meaning you had little chance to control the emotion that forced you to disregard it. A daily stop loss is not just important to preserve capital, it also protects confidence and prevents it from taking too big of a hit. 4. Book wins. In normal situations, you want to keep your foot on the gas pedal. But in the early stages of correcting desperation, the losses that come after some big profits can be more painful and damaging than losses at the start of a day. Since overconfidence and fear can negatively impact execution after earning outsized profits, booking a win and shutting it down is a temporary crutch that you should use. You have significantly less to gain than what you have to lose from a mental and emotional standpoint. Greed might compel you to push too hard, driven by a desire to instantly correct your confidence problems. Or the slightest drop in profit might induce tilt and cause you to force entry into a marginal trade. These setbacks re-injure your confidence. Book a win to preserve confidence so that you can go into tomorrow with something to build on. Do it with tomorrow in mind. 5. Take regular breaks or use a timer. Maintaining emotional control throughout the session is critical. If greed, fear, or anger take over your ability to think, you're far more likely to succumb to the intense accumulated emotions that follows close behind. A timer increases the likelihood that you can disrupt and correct these problems. While this strategy is disruptive and may even keep you from trading your best, it's far better than the alternative. 6. Take aggressive action towards the early signs. To take action early, go through the steps in Chapter 9 to devise a real-time strategy to disrupt the problem and gain control of it. 7. Recognize small steps forward. Recognizing sessions where you make progress gives you a boost in confidence to keep you working hard. Remember, increased recognition or awareness, not emotional control, is often the first signal of progress. Desperation is a major problem, and eliminating it takes sustained effort over a long period of time. When small improvements go unnoticed, you might abandon a strategy that's actually working. 8. Release day-to-day accumulated emotion. In the early stages of containing and correcting your greed, tilt, fear, or confidence issues, you'll create a pressure cooker-like effect. You'll get better at containing the emotion during the trading session, but if you don't release it, several days can go by where you feel like you're making improvements mentally and emotionally, which you are, but then one day you'll snap, and it will feel like the emotion just came out of nowhere. Use the mental hand history at the end of every trading session to digest and release the emotion. This is especially important after days that sparked a lot of emotion, where you were still able to prevent desperation from setting in. Celebrate that win, but digest and release the emotion. Otherwise, your odds of blowing up tomorrow are greater. 9. Correct self-criticism. I have yet to work with someone grappling with desperation where self-criticism wasn't a massive problem. When your reactions are so out of line, it makes sense why they deserve criticism, but it doesn't help. You need to think practically about why you failed and why desperation occurred. Learn from it and improve your strategy. Keep working on the problem in a practical way. The faster you can do that, the more likely the next iteration of the problem will allow you to take another step forward. 10. Correct the fuck-its. When you're so deep in a hole, a common tendency is to say, fuck it, and try to hit a home run. What's the harm? If it pays off, you get the benefit of escaping hell today. But that might also reinforce the idea that you can pull off an escape like this again. That makes you less vigilant about the work needed to keep yourself out of such spots to begin with. Trying to hit a home run in such a compromised mental state is weak. You don't reinforce quality decision-making. Instead, you reinforce the option to gamble as part of your range. Sure, it's really hard to walk away with a loss, especially a big one, when you have capital you could use for your escape, but you have to think about tomorrow. What's the value of the capital and confidence you preserve for tomorrow? When you're strong enough to be able to take a loss and show up stronger the next day, you've got something to build on. The fuck-its may be fun and make for a good story when they pay off, but that's not why you're here, right? Before every trading session, review your strategy to prevent desperation as if rehearsing for an emergency that has a high chance of occurring. This keeps all the details of your plan fresh in your mind so that you're ready to act. Be especially firm on this after several days or weeks of success. Complacency in your preparation is dangerous. Realistically, you'll need to go through several market cycles or a minimum of 3 to 6 months before you'll have firm evidence that desperation is improving or no longer a problem. This is a major issue, and like having a severe physical injury such as tearing your ACL, the rehab is long, so buckle up. If you're serious about trading, you must tackle this problem, and your best shot may be working with a psychologist, therapist, or coach. You could even bring them this section of the book to further bolster your regimen. Gurdeep, a part-time trader from the UK, can attest to the time and effort required to correct desperation. Using the 10 steps that I outlined above, it took him around 3 months to see any progress, and another 6 months to prove that he could trade without blowing up. That was with my help. So on your own, it will be a challenge to say the least. Let's look more closely at how Gurdeep managed to get on the other side of desperation. When he and I started working together, he had been day and swing trading for 3 years without having made money. He had a mentor who described him as a good trader with a lot of potential who had to gain control of his emotions. Every month, even every few weeks, Gurdeep would go through a series of boom and bust cycles, making 10,000 and then losing it all back and then some. At any moment, a normal loss or the threat of a losing day could trigger a cascade of revenge trading, doubling down on losing trades, and raising his stake on subsequent trades, all in an effort to make money back and end the day green. Out of the gate, we worked on mapping his revenge, which was the big problem that could eventually lead to desperation. It took about a month and a few big blowouts to get a clear map, and another month before it was precise. Gurdeep really embraced the detective role, and mapping the details of his tilt immediately afterward proved to be a big eye-opener. Seeing every step on paper was a boost to his confidence that he could eventually beat this. Even though he knew the problem was going to take a lot of work, he had previously felt consumed and overrun by his emotions. Now he could see the emotions coming, and that was powerful. At this point, we established a zero-tolerance policy, deciding that if his tilt rose to level 3 on his scale, he had to shut it down for the day. That was the last point where he could possibly retain control without needing luck from the market to avoid a massive losing day. Over the next 2 months, the boom and bust cycles continued, but Gurdeep showed small signs of progress after each cycle. Sometimes the progress was a clearer understanding of the performance flaws or the personal issues causing the intense emotions. At other times, he was able to recognize the urge to get his money back and seek revenge, and instead, quit the session. At the heart of Gurdeep's desperation lay personal issues of low self-confidence. Losing money was devastating and made him feel worthless. That was further reinforced by the self-inflicted losses that came from his lack of emotional control and a growing sense that he was running out of time to make trading work out. For him, every trade felt like his identity and future were on the line. Add in a mixture of high expectations, intense self-criticism, and common performance flaws, and Gurdeep had a prototypical recipe for desperation. As we worked through the issues, the intensity of his emotions began to stabilize. We doubled down on that progress by tightening his routine. He would spend 1 to 2 hours on the simulator before a trading session to practice executing his strategy. During the session, an alarm would go off every 15 to 30 minutes to remind him to check on his emotional state and review corrections to his flaws. Then after every session, Gurdeep evaluated his process, looking for mistakes to improve and improvements to praise. When he tilted, instead of getting angry at himself for tilting, he tried to understand why it happened and what was driving the anger. 7 months in, the cycles became less frequent and less severe, but Gurdeep continued to work the process. He'd take weeks off when personal issues added emotional volatility to trading that he couldn't control. He set realistic goals to ease back the time pressure. He continued to work on his confidence issues and understand more about what made him a competent trader. He maintained a strong commitment to his routine. All of that hard work paid off. Now Gurdeep's tilt is caused by flaws that are more normal among traders, like being too P&L focused or getting stopped out by just a few ticks. More important, he believes he can make it as a trader and is motivated to realize his full potential. Hope and wishing. After an intense section like desperation, you might read the title of this one and assume that I'm going to talk about hope and wishing in a positive, uplifting way. Well, the opposite is true. My goal for this section is to kill your hopes and wishes. Welp. To be blunt, there's no place for hope or wishes when it comes to trading, or any area of performance for that matter. Sure, there's a place for hope and wishes in other parts of your life, but in this environment, they're dangerous, undermine your confidence, and stunt your improvement. For those of you who routinely succumb to hope and wishes, it may be so common or such an ingrained part of how you operate that you may not even realize they're there. They come out at particular moments, showing up in isolated ways and giving you the impression that they don't affect you. Hope. Hope is an emotion connected to things we can't control. Hope can be a useful emotion in society, with so much of our lives affected by things outside of our control. We can hope for good weather when we host a barbecue or go to an outdoor wedding. We can hope our airplane lands safely and on time. But hope has no place in performance. Time and energy spent focusing on things you can't control are wasted, and they need to be redirected to places where you have the opportunity to improve your control, like on your execution or how you handle your emotions. Here are some of the ways that hope seeps into trading. Hoping that you don't get stopped out, that you'll reach your target, or that your loser will get back to break even. Babysitting a trade, hoping your presence will yield more profit. Hoping you have a great month or that your results turn around. Losing hope that you can get over the hump and realize your goals. Becoming so hopeful about your own potential that you feel like your future has already been realized. At your lowest points, you may have felt hopeless. Essentially, you believed there was nothing you could do to achieve your goals. And you had thoughts like, I can't see how things are going to turn around. I should just quit. Or, no matter what I do, it's not going to make a difference, so why bother? You believe that you don't have control and that you never will. Your hopes have been dashed. To begin correcting this problem, think about the reasons why you turned to hope in the first place. For one, since it's so common in society, you may have assumed that it was okay here. Or you might have deep doubts about your ability to succeed. Rather than deal with those fears about your incompetence, you automatically turn to hope as a way to manage that. Start by identifying where hope exists and ask yourself, what is it protecting? Basically, what do you not feel in control of, and why not? Then, as I sometimes joke with my clients, fuck hope. It's that simple. Putting energy into something you can't control, or worse, giving up control in spots where you need it, is dangerous. Even though it's small and seemingly innocuous, what happens when what you hope for doesn't happen? Whatever it was that hope was protecting gets exposed, like ripping off a Band-Aid. Immediately, your lack of control becomes obvious. Higher emotional volatility as you overreact to losses, mistakes, and setbacks. Or if what you hope for materializes, you assume control of more of those big wins. In a larger sense, when you rely on hope, you're not controlling all that you actually could control. Like a lot of things, the first step is awareness. If you have confidence issues and by this point haven't figured out what's causing them, or if you're missing something in your analysis, hope may be affecting you in a subtle way. Wishing. Identifying the wishes that are hidden in your mind is critical. Wishing not only causes instability in your confidence, but also negatively affects your ability to correct the flaws, biases, and illusions already impacting it. Wishes such as an ability to always perform at your best, know the direction of the market, or learn easily are usually harbored deep in the recesses of traders' minds. Surprisingly so. Many traders are stunned to realize their confidence is affected by wishes like these. They're illogical. That much is obvious. And yet, as impractical as they may be, many traders have them. It's one thing to want to always perform at your best, know the direction of the market, or learn easily, but it's quite another to wish those outcomes could be real. When you have wishes such as these, it means you actually believe they're possible and hold out hope that one day they could come true. Why would you work as hard as you could to improve as a trader when deep down you believe you could predict the direction of the market? Why would you be open-minded or try to learn about the mental game if you believed your emotional problems could be corrected easily? If you believe your wishes will be granted, it would be illogical to work hard. Since spotting these wishes is tough, try this process that I go through when I'm working with a client. First, take a few deep breaths to relax your mind and suspend logical thinking. Logic believes these wishes are absurd and will deny their existence. Put that part of your mind aside for a moment and allow your gut to react to the following questions. Answer them as honestly as you can. Do you wish that variance wasn't part of trading and that you could make what you deserve? Do you wish that you could have perfect discipline and always execute your strategy correctly? Do you wish that you had the perfect method, system, or indicator that would allow you to print money? Do you wish you could have masterful control of the markets and make millions? Do you wish you could make money every month, every day, or from every trade? Do you wish you could watch a video or read a book and be able to instantly apply all that you have learned? When in a big hole, do you wish for one trade to get you right back to even? Even if you don't wish for any of these directly, as you read them, does a part of you think any of them would be cool outcomes? Your answers will range from a firm no to a resounding yes, or somewhere in between. Wishing isn't a black and white thing. Wishes show up in matters of degree. Regardless of how small they appear, correcting them is vital to developing stable confidence. Wishes are hard to eliminate. They're like a stubborn mule that won't budge. The more you try to force them to go away, the more intractable they become. Force won't cut it. This should make sense, as you're essentially trying to wish them away. Instead, you need to get to the heart of the wish and resolve it. To make working through this process easier to conceptualize, here's a story of a trader whom I worked with who found that a wish was surprisingly at the heart of an issue he had with FOMO. Nick is an aspiring full-time trader from the UK. When he and I first worked together, he was an office worker in local government, but due to the coronavirus pandemic, he was able to trade for an hour when the US market opened. Here's what Nick described in steps 1 and 2 of his mental hand history. 1, what's the problem? I don't want to miss out on the opportunity of the day. So when I do, I want to make it back somewhere and begin searching for a trade that will make the money I should have made. That FOMO can even carry over to the next day. I get hyped up and go into the day thinking, this is going to be a big day. But I instead end up with massive losses. 2, why does the problem exist? On days where the opportunities are there and clear, I should be good enough to take them. I also look back and see that my plans are working, even if I haven't traded them well. I realize that hindsight trading doesn't make sense, but I expect the market will provide the same opportunities again the following day, and that those next trades will be winners. When he said, "I expect the market will provide the same opportunities," I sense there might be a wish behind such a statement. I asked him to do a gut check, to take a deep breath, shut off the logical side of his brain, and allow his gut to answer if he wished the market provided the same opportunities each day. He immediately said yes, and added that he also wished that he could trade perfectly and go on a big win streak that would never end. We continued with those wishes as the new first step in the mental hand history. 1, what's the problem? Part of me wishes the market could provide enough good opportunities each day that I could trade perfectly and go on a big win streak that never ends. 2, why does the problem exist? If the market gave me perfect opportunities and I traded them perfectly, then I would catch all the big moves and that would prove I'm successful. Leaving money on the table when the market leaves it there for me says that I'm behind everyone else who is able to take advantage of the day, and that I need to make up for that. 3. What is flawed? Opportunities are easy to see in hindsight. I often look back on a chart and think, that was the most obvious thing. But it's only obvious when you already know what's going to happen. That doesn't mean that I'll be able to see and take them in the future. What I'm really looking for is to eliminate the doubt or uncertainty that I'm profitable enough to make it as a full-time trader. Working through the layers of this problem, you can see that Nick's FOMO on the surface was actually caused by deeper concerns about his ability to make it as a trader. When nailing down a correction in steps 4 and 5, it was important that it corrected both the FOMO and the wishes. Here's what we came up with. 4. What's the correction? It's okay to have uncertainty. That's an inherent part of this game. Continue to learn and develop your competence, and that will allow you to capture more of the opportunities, but never all of them. 5. What logic confirms that correction? I can't be perfect, and trying to be puts my dreams at risk. For Nick, the biggest benefit of the process came from realizing how silly these wishes sounded. He prides himself on being a logical thinker, and having to admit that he was invested in these wishes made him quickly realize how unrealistic they were. This immediately removed some of the pressure to be perfect, and his work around trading became more efficient, such as focusing on screenshots and journaling. Additionally, his view of the market and how he needs to operate became much more realistic. Perfect patterns rarely present themselves the way Nick wished them to, and letting go of this wish allowed him to recognize the edge he was previously missing by trying to be perfect. He also became a lot better at spotting those moments where a wish would pop up. For example, a reaction like, ah, I should have been able to take this. As a result, he could focus more on what was actually realistic. The more he did that, the more comfortable he became with what was realistic and unrealistic, and that further decreased the power of those wishes. Plus, he stopped daydreaming about unrealistic situations, freeing him up to see opportunities in the market without a false narrative that had plagued him before. Such wishes can never come true. Believing in them is no different than believing Santa Claus delivers presents to millions of kids in one night. Instead, change your wish into a realistic goal and come up with a strategy and plan. Look for the subtle or not so subtle ways in which wishes hijack your efforts and correct them in real time. As you work that process steadily over time, your confidence will become more stable and you'll notice how much easier it is to be at your best. No matter where your confidence problems stem from, you now have a good understanding of how to create stable confidence in your trading. As this aspect of your mental game improves, so will your ability to be consistent in your decision-making. Now that you've learned how confidence as well as other primary emotional problems can interfere with your trading, it's time to dive into discipline. We couldn't take a closer look at this problem until you had experience teasing out the effects of greed, fear, tilt, and confidence on your execution. But at this juncture, you're ready to see if any discipline problems are holding you back. That's coming up in Chapter 8. Chapter 8, Discipline. Talent without discipline is like an octopus on roller skates. There's plenty of movement, but you never know if it's going to be forward, backward, or sideways. H. Jackson Brown, Jr. So far, I've covered the emotions that cause problems you previously thought were due to a lack of discipline. You now understand that emotions compelled you to trade against your strategy. For instance, by forcing a mediocre entry, jumping into a sideways market, or impatiently closing out a trade before you hit your target. You've learned that your attempts to remain disciplined weren't going to work. A lack of discipline wasn't the problem. Powerful emotions were the problem. If you've taken steps to correct the flaws that lie beneath those emotional issues, you're ready to take on any actual discipline problems that remain. If you've come to this chapter directly, or if you're unsure if you've made enough progress correcting your emotional issues, don't worry. You'll get feedback pretty quickly on whether the issue is related to emotion or discipline. If you make good effort to use the advice in this chapter for 2 weeks of full-time trading and you don't make progress, the odds are high that you need to address the underlying emotions first. Or if you only make temporary progress, but quickly slip back into old habits, you need to prioritize correcting your emotions alongside the advice in this chapter. If you're unsure whether or not you're ready to take discipline head-on, make your best estimate and the feedback will tell you whether or not you're ready. For some of you, achieving emotional resolution has already led to automatic improvements in discipline. Essentially, you had the capacity or skill to be disciplined, but it was hidden or impaired by those emotional issues. Once they were removed, your capacity for discipline sprang to life. But for others, resolution is like building a house in a forest. Resolution comes in and clears the